Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the richest nation in the world when we come back. Well, 3,000 years ago, before the science of meteorology was even thought of, old King Solomon wrote in Ecclesiastes 1, verse 7, that all of the rivers run into the sea, and yet the sea is not full, and unto the place from whence the rivers come, thither they return again. Well, you know, every year the continents and islands of this earth pour down into the oceans a stupendous volume of water. In fact, it's about 286,000 cubic miles of water flow into the oceans every year. And for century after century and millennium after millennium, this has been going on, and the sea has not increased its level by so much as an inch. Now, how is that possible? Well, we call that the cycle of evaporation and precipitation. And the writer of Ecclesiastes said that the ocean maintains its level in spite of this gigantic annual influx, because the rivers go back to the place from whence they came, and indeed they do. Every drop of rain that falls climbs back upon the Creator's elevator of evaporation to form themselves into clouds and then ride back to the head of their toboggan slide to begin their journey all over again. In the modern science of meteorology, we understand that. And we comprehend these laws. Well, modern science has learned what the writer of Ecclesiastes knew 3,000 years ago. And you know, that's just one more of the many examples of science in the Scripture. And it's one more of the many lessons that we teach in our Mosaic Law School, conducted twice a year here at the Law School in Isabella, Missouri. If you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free General Law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. That's the place to start. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Just click on to the archives page. georgegordon.org, hit the archives page, and you can download that free General Law CD package right there. All right, last time I said we'd take a look at the serviceability of America's debt. But before we get into is our debt serviceable, let's talk about, well, what is serviceability? What makes your debt unserviceable, and when does that point arrive? Well, let's try an example. Let's suppose that you make $1,000 a month over here at Mutual Plywood, and you're living your life, and out of your budget every month, you spend $150 a month on gasoline. So you got $850 a month left over for other expenses and fun and playing games, but every month you got to have this $150 to buy gas. Now, you're living within your budget. Everything's going along fine. Some guy comes along, though, one day, and he says, here, let me give you my Chevron credit card. Chevron credit card. So you say, well, that sounds like a pretty good idea. So you take out your Chevron credit card here. And so next month, what we do is we make our $1,000, but we don't spend any of the money out of our paycheck. Instead, we put the $150 worth of gas on the credit card. Now, this month we spent $1,150, or at least we had income totaling $1,150, didn't we? We had $1,000 from Mutual Plywood, and now we have $150 in our credit card. We only earned $1,000, but we spent $1,150. That's just like getting a $150 raise. Well, at least it's a $150 raise this month. Now, instead of paying that credit card off, instead of taking $150 out of our paycheck and sending that in, we just send them our minimum payment, 10%. We'll just pick a number here, 10%. So we send them $15, and we got a $135 outstanding debt. So let's do that again next month. So next month, we put another $150 on the credit card, added to the $135. Now we got $285 on the credit card, so we send them the $10 minimum payment. That's $28.50. That gives us a balance. I think it's about $256, thereabouts. Now let's just keep doing that month after month after month after month, shall we? This is going to be a hell of a neat program. We get $150 a month worth of gas, but we only have to pay 10% of the outstanding balance. But every month that outstanding balance grows. It's going to grow from $15 to $28.50, and then it'll grow to $40. And then, you know, as time progresses along, it's going to grow to a point where it's greater than the $150. In fact, it's going to grow to a point where it's greater than the $1,000. And unless our income expands, unless our gross domestic product expands, and this is what these Keynesian economists have been doing, they've been expanding the income of the nation. You know, our income in our country used to be $1 trillion a year, but now it's $14 trillion a year. And their theory is, well, as long as your income is constantly expanding and your debt is expanding, everything's fine. And you know they've got a point there. If, in fact, your income was expanding at the same rate as your debt, everything would be fine. But this interest charge over here grows geometrically. Your income grows arithmetically, and your interest rate grows geometrically, and there comes a point in time, well, while your debt is growing 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, and your income is growing by 1, 2, 3, 4, you reach a point of equilibrium at some point. And if you want to test this out, just take the numbers that I just gave you, and you can run it out, and about 10 or 15 equations later, you're going to find a point of equilibrium. And once you pass that point of equilibrium, your debt becomes unserviceable. And that's because the interest on the debt is now growing at such a rate that your income can never grow fast enough to catch up with the rate of expense. That is, your expenses are growing faster than your income. Now, as long as your income is growing as fast as or faster than your debt, you're okay. Everything's going to be fine. And in the early days of these Ponzi schemes, that's exactly what happens. Your income is actually growing faster than your debts, and it makes you believe that you're a lot wealthier than you really are. Now, the Greek debt crisis has snuck up on them, and now it's unserviceable. And the reason that it's unserviceable is because their interest rate is now up to 17%. Now, here's what a 17% interest rate does. It's called the rule of 72. So if you can remember this, you just punched 72 into your calculator and divide that by the interest rate, 17%, and the number that comes out is 4.23529-4117, or 4.2%, or round numbers, the debt doubles every 4 years. That's what that's telling you. So if we owe $1,000 at 17%, then every 4 years our $1,000 principal is going to double. to 2,000. Now you've got 17% of 2,000. Okay, that doubles every 2 years, or every 4 years. And so 4 years later, your 2 is going to multiply to 4, and then 4 to 8, and then 8 to 16, and 16 to 32. Meanwhile, your income is still running $1,000 a month. And your debt is unserviceable because now it's growing faster than your income, and there's no way for you to pay it. Furthermore, the debt, even if you're making payments on it, when you get through making payments over a period of time, you're going to owe more than when you started. Now, that's where we're at in the United States, and that's where the Greeks are at. There isn't any way that the Greeks can pay off the debt. And in fact, they're about to default on the debt. They can't even pay the interest on the debt. They can't pay the principal back, and now they can't service the interest. And that's where we're headed here in the United States. We're at a point in our collective history. You got 300 million people in the country that owe $100 trillion. It's actually more than that. I'm just being conservative. It's quite a bit more than that. And your debt structure is such that with an interest rate of 5%, you can't service that debt. And so I did work out these numbers. So let me give you a couple, three ideas, show you where we're at and why it is that we can't pay this debt off in the United States. And the inevitability of this is default. And default doesn't mean that we're all going to die and go to hell. It means that we're all going to lose our assets. Now, not everybody's going to lose their assets. You can be pretty damn sure that Warren Buffett, George Soros, and Bill Gates are not going to lose their fortunes. They're going to lose some money. They're not going to lose their fortunes. So you don't need to be concerned about them. But you're going to lose your house, your car, all of your 401k, your motorhome, and all these toys that you've got. That's going to be swept away from you, and you're going back to zero COD. Now, if you're 28 years old, that's not such a big problem because you can start over again. But when you're 70 or 60 or 50, it's a lot harder for you to start over again because it takes 3 years to start at zero and make $100,000. And that's presuming that you know how to do that. So if you're 65 and you are wiped out, you're going to be 68 before you get back up to $100,000 if you know how, and so on down the line. So let's take a look at our GDP. I call this the reality check. And our GDP in this country is about $14 trillion. Total debt, public and private, is about $100 trillion. So the per capita income of the United States is around $46,666.66. We arrive at that number by taking 300 million people and dividing that into $14 trillion. And you'll come up with a 46,000 plus, or 47,000 if you want to round it off. 50,000 wouldn't be too bad if you want to round it off. Now, we also have a debt. Our debt, remember, is 100 trillion, 300 million people. That's $333,333.33. So every one of us in the country is making about $50,000 a year, and we owe about $330,000. Now, there's some interest that we have to pay on all that debt. So if you'll look at your mortgage interest, your car payments and interest, your credit card debt and interest, and so on, that interest rate over there is probably running somewhere around 5%. It's probably over that, but let's just take the number 5%. That's pretty round. And 5% interest on that debt is $16,666.66 per person per year. So you have a $46,000 income and you're paying $16,000 a year on that as interest, which leaves you with $30,000. See where you're at? You got $30,000 left over when you pay the interest on all of your debt. where all of our prorated share of the debt. Well, in the last 50 years, no principal has been paid on either the public or private debt, which totals $100 trillion plus. So over the past 50 years, we haven't paid a dime. Nothing. We've expanded the debt. We just keep borrowing more and rolling the debt over and doing all kinds of neat economic tricks. George Bush Sr. called it smoke and mirrors. Smoke and mirrors. Very unlikely that over the next 50 years we're going to change our ways, but the change in our spending habits may be forced upon us. You know, you people that bought houses and they've been foreclosed on and they've taken your car, you lost your job, you needed to have worked out some kind of a plan at some time in the past for your future. You needed to take a look at your position and say, you know, if we continue on, this debt's going to become unserviceable, and before we reach that point, I better take some drastic action. Well, you didn't do that. And you didn't need to. But the drastic action was forced upon you when you defaulted on your mortgage, defaulted on your car payments, and lost your job. You didn't have to do anything. You didn't have to plan for anything. You didn't have to concern yourself. Somebody else did it all for you. They came out and took your house, came out and took your car, came out and took your big screen TV. Your boss fired you. Okay, all of that was done for you. And that's what's going to happen here in the United States and indeed around the world. And all of this debt at some point in time will come up for payment. And when you miss the payment, then somebody's going to foreclose on the collateral. Sometimes this causes war. Sometimes, like Argentina, it causes massive unemployment, 62% unemployment in Argentina the last time they went under. The people who are rich in Argentina, they didn't suffer at all. The poor people did. The, you know, the Joe Sixpacks and Sally Housewives, those are the people that take it in the shorts. Every time. It's always been that way. It'll be that way again. Now, debt doubles every 14.4 years at 5%. If you want to test that, use the rule of 72. Divide 72 by 5. And it comes out 14.4. So about every 14 years, our debt doubles. So at 5%, this $100 trillion that we owe today, where it's going to turn into $200 trillion. And then 14 years after that, that $200 trillion is going to turn into $400 trillion. Then 14 years after that, that $400 will turn into $800. And that $400 trillion to $800 trillion bears 5% interest. So instead of paying 5% interest on $400 trillion, you'll be paying 5% interest on $800. Well, if you couldn't pay your debt when you were paying 5% of $400, what makes you think that you'll be able to pay 5% of $800? Won't that be twice as much? So at some point in time, you need to develop a plan where you shut off all borrowing and concentrate on paying the debt back. That's the theory behind debt, that at some point in time, you're going to pay this debt back. We're borrowing the money today because we intend to pay it back tomorrow, but we want to eat, drink, and be merry today. There's an emergency, and we've got to do this. So we've got to borrow this money. Well, now, debt doubles every 14 years at 5%. It doubles every 12 years at 6%. It doubles every 10 years at 7%. It doubles every 9 years at 8%, and it doubles every 8 years at 9%, and the debt doubles every 7.2 years at 10%, the debt doubles every 6.5 years at 11%, The debt doubles every 6 years at 12%. The debt doubles every 5.5 years at 13%. The debt doubles every 5.1 at 14%, 4.8 at 15%. When you get out here to 18% interest, the debt doubles every 4 years. So if you've ever looked on an invoice and it says, if you don't pay this bill by the 10th of the month, we're going to add a 1.5% per month charge to this. And you look at that and you say, oh, shucks, it's only 1.5%. I owe them 80 bucks. So what are they going to do? Charge me 80 cents? You know, big deal. And you're right, 1.5% per month doesn't amount to very much. But when you calculate it out, that's 18% per annum. And when you calculate that out, that principal on your debt is going to double every 4 years. Now, that's pretty damn significant. Now, let's suppose that we want to decide to pay off this $100 trillion debt. You know, all of us get together and we say, hey, let's go pay this thing off. So now we're going to have to develop a very bare bones budget, aren't we? That means no more borrowing. So we can cut up our credit cards. We're going to pay the bank's mortgage off on the house. We're going to pay the auto loan off. We're not going to borrow any more money. And all of us in the country, we're all going to work real hard. We're going to save our pennies and nickels and dimes, and we're going to pay off all this debt. How long is it going to take us to pay off this $100 trillion debt? Well, if we all decided to pay off our $100 trillion debt, our share is $333,333.33. That would include our share of the national debt, our share of our state and local debts, our share of our mortgages and credit cards and every debt in the country. And we're all going to agree to do this, and it's $333,000 each. Now, remember, we have an income of about $47,000 a year. That's our total income. But we have to take 15% of that $46,666.66 and pay that to Social Security. So let me just do that for you quickly. $46,666.66 times 0.15 is $6,999.99. So that's $7,000. So we're going to have to take $7,000 out of our paycheck and pay that over to Social Security. And then we got to take 17%. That's for income tax. 15%, that's about a third, isn't it? One third. That just goes to those two taxes. Now, there's 14 taxes, but I won't burden you with all of those various taxes. We'll just round this off right here. We'll be real conservative. With a total debt, $333,000, total income, $46,000, and we're going to pay this off at the rate of, you know, we don't know what we're going to pay it off yet. I haven't got that far, but we're going to pay this debt off. But we first of all have to pay our taxes, don't we, out of our $46,000. All right. If you got $46,000 in income less 15% for Social Security and 17% for income tax, that leaves us $31,734.33. That's the way those numbers come out. Now, we have to pay rent on our house, don't we? And the rent, we'll just pick a number here. It's $1,000 a month, $12,000 a year. That would be $19,734.33 per year on our mortgage payment. Now, remember, that's not out of $46,000. That's out of $31,000. The IRS is going to come in, and they're going to take their cut before we do anything. So, we have to take off our excuse me, I said it costs you 19. It takes off 12,000. It leaves us with 19,734. Now, we've got car payments, insurance, gas, license, and so on. That amounts to 55 cents a mile. That's what they tell us, cost to run a car. And we're going to run at an average of 15,000 miles. So I'll just take 5.5 per mile for 10,000 miles. I'll be even more conservative. How's that for a plan? We won't drive as far as the 3A people say we're going to. And that leaves us with $14,000. So now we've paid our taxes, paid our car expenses, insurance. Now, food for just one person for a year at $10 a day. And that's pretty reasonable. $10 a day, going to eat three times a day, $3.33 per meal. That's about $3,650 for the year. So now we have $10,583.33. Now let's take the $583.33 and let's blow all of it. Yeah, that's right. Let's just blow it. We'll blow it on clothes. Now for that year, so that out of our $16,666 income, we have $10,000 in cold, hard fiat paper money with which to pay all of our debts, which accumulate to $333,333.33, which cost $16,666 in interest charges. Got to remember, we got this interest to pay on our $333,000. Now, the next result is that we are $6,666 short. So what we're going to do is we're going to take $10,000 that's left over and apply that to our debt every year. Shall we? Now, so far we've paid our taxes, paid Social Security, paid our mortgage, paid our car payments, and we have $10,000 left over after we spent the last little jag on clothes. No Starbucks here. No vacations to Disneyland. This is hard-nosed business, and we're going to pay our debt off. But can you begin to see what our problem is? We've got a $300,000 debt with a $16,000 interest charge, but we've only got $10,000 with which to pay it. We don't even have enough money to pay the interest on the debt. Boys and girls, that's where everybody in America is. We now have debts which accumulate higher to a point where we can't even pay the interest on it. That's where the Greeks are. Now, the purpose for this Greek and Portuguese and Spanish and all these pigs, they call them. This is Ireland, Italy, Portugal, Spain, and Greece. This finger pointing, the credit agencies reducing their credit worthiness, that's a game plan. Our Treasury Department, our Goldman Sachs, our guys on our side of the Atlantic had to create a diversionary action. They had to create a show where you would get your mind off of the debt of the United States and onto somebody else's. So they triggered that Greek crisis. Because if you people ever took a look at the United States, we're in worse economic condition than the Greeks, the Italians, or the rest of the pig countries. We owe more. We have less to pay it with. And our $14 trillion a year that we're bragging about as our GDP, $3 trillion of that is stimulus money. That's not creativity or productivity. Let me show you how that works. Let's suppose that we go out and we drill a hole in the ground and we find oil. And it's producing, let's just pick out a number here, 100 barrels of oil a day at $80 a barrel. All of a sudden, we've got $8,000 a day coming out of the ground, don't we? Now, that's new production. That's income we never had before. That's creativity. And as long as we're doing that, that's where real wealth comes from. All wealth comes out of the ground, and that's just a good way for us to get real rich. Now, as a consequence, though, of our dilemma here in the United States, our dilemma is we're not creating new wealth. What we're doing is transferring money from one pocket to another. And here's an example of that. $1.7 trillion a year of our gross domestic product goes to medicine. It goes to hospitals and doctors and clinics and healthcare professionals. That's not a creation of new wealth. That's a transfer of wealth that we already have to somebody else. So we're taking $5,000 out of our oil well and we're paying that over to the doctor, which depreciates our overall wealth. That's what the bottom line is. It's a wealth transfer, but it's not a creation of new wealth. At the end of every year, the corn farmer is actually creating new wealth. He goes out and harvests that corn. That's never existed before. When the automobile company turns out 1,000 cars, that's 1,000 cars that never existed before. That's the creation of new wealth. We're not creating new wealth in this country. We're transferring the wealth around that's already here, that we already have, that we already created. And then we're counting it. So that means that we create the wealth and count it once, then we transfer the wealth and count it twice. Well, okay, you can keep doing that, but that's not new wealth. And that's what we're doing. So as a result of that, we don't even have $14 trillion in income, but I'm going to give you credit for it. I'll count it like that's real income and that it's new created prosperity. But even at that, you can't service your debt. So now what are we going to do? Well, the other day we had a program and I said, to give you an illustration of what you do to service your debt, you take some area of your budget that you can do without. For instance, public education here in the United States. Now, public education costs us $500 billion a year to educate students and they turn out dumb. If you were to just take half the money that we spend on public school and give it to the private sector, that is the Catholic, Baptist, and Lutheran church schools. See, those people are educating children, and they educate those children to a standard that's adequate, and they do it for half as much money. So the solution's pretty simple. You wipe out public education, give to the private sector, put it in the marketplace, leave taxes right where they're at, and take the $250 savings, that's $250 billion a year, apply it to your $14 trillion of national debt, and you could wipe out your national debt in 56 years. It doesn't solve your problem with your mortgages. It doesn't solve your problem with your car payments and all the rest of these debts like Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid, you know, and the war in Iraq and the war in Afghanistan. It doesn't pay those debts off, but you could pay your national debt off just by a simple expedient like that. Now, you're not going to do that. The politicians don't want to do that. The bankers don't want to do that. The people that profit off of these debt defaults, short selling, bailouts, those are the people that are in control of your Congress and in control of your White House. They're never going to vote for anything like that. So I'm not here suggesting that you've got a solution to your problem. I just wanted to point out to you that if you wanted to solve your problem, there, you might actually be able to pull it off, or at least you could have until recent times. Now you're to the point where not only aren't you going to start, I mean, you're not doing anything meaningful to reform. You're talking about it. Here in the United States, we're talking about reforming the banking system and reforming the debt structure and so on. But they're not actually doing that, and indeed they're not going to do that. They're telling you what you want to hear, but that isn't what they're going to do. So that leaves you and I, Joe, out here in a bankrupt nation trying to figure out, well, what are we going to do to save ourselves? It's kind of like riding on the Titanic. And, you know, you saw the movie and I read the book, and you and I are pretty well convinced that this thing's going to run into an iceberg and sink in about 2 hours and 20 minutes. The logical thing to do then would be to run up and tell Captain Smith, hey, wait, you need to slow this thing down and steer south because you're steering right into these icebergs. And the captain says, here's a couple of tickets to the A-Deck Lounge. Go down and have a drink on the White Star Line. Relax. Everything's under control. We're taking care of everything. Now, I want to point out that when the Titanic sank, the 1,500 victims on the ship, or their successors and interest, got paid, if I remember this right, $600,000. $600,000 got divided up among the 1,500 dead people or their survivors. And the White Star Line got paid $5.5 million for the wreck. It was the single most profitable one-half voyage in the history of the White Star Line. They made a ton of money off of that. Of course, the victims didn't get anything, did they? Now, the Goldman Sachs, Bank of America, and the politicians, they are waxing rich off of this economic debacle, this global world debt crisis. They're just making money hand over fist at the expense of all the rest of us. And I don't blame them. Hell, I get after it. You know, if you got chances to make money, you know, go to it. It's just that I just don't want to get involved in it, and I don't want to pay it. So I want to opt out. Now, I see that we're up here to the halfway point, so let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now it's 8 schools and all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. And it has our radio log schedule and archives, and all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. That's free. That number again, 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can download it right there off of our webpage. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Go to the archives page, and you'll find it right there. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements These recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and editorial review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, the beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, let me give you a wise old saying for the day. If you never pay interest, you will never pay more than you agreed to. If you never pay interest, you'll never pay more than you agreed to. Now remember, this interest now grows geometrically. Now the reason that God told you not to pay interest, that it's a crime to do that, is because of geometric progression. It at some point in time is going to double, and then it's going to double again. So if you pay a 5% interest charge, the principal doubles every 5 years. If you buy a house for 30 years at 5% interest, you buy one house for you and two for the banker. So total, you're going to pay three times what you're paying for the house. You're going to buy three houses and keep one. That's why interest is bad for you. Now, with Greece, their interest is growing at 17%. So, just take their debt. It's $160 billion, I believe it is. I think that's what a number I saw the other day. 160 times 0.17. They have to pay $27 billion a year in interest. $27 billion a year in interest on $160 billion worth of debt. So, you know, it's been advertised that they need $60 billion or $30 billion. No, no. They lied at 30. They lied at 60, and they may be lying at 160. I don't know what the real number is, and I'm not sure that even they know. But it's way more than their income can service. And to show you how this works out, if you take 72, this is called the rule of 72. I want to write this down. I'll show you how to calculate your interest payments. 72 divided by the interest rate. And the interest rate 17%. So every 4.2 years, their principal doubles. Whatever the principal is, it's going to double every 4.2 years. So they want to refinance their debt. Well, all that's going to happen at that interest rate is that in 4 years, they're going to owe twice as much. Boy, that's telling you something, isn't it? And that's where we're at in the United States. Remember, I mentioned in the first half of today's program, I said there's a point of balance or equilibrium. Once you pass that, you're dead. We passed it here in the United States. We're dead. Default's the only other option. Now, that doesn't mean that all the people in Greece are going to die. It means that they're going to get put on COD. So let's suppose that Greece, the people of Greece, and they're part of the European community, they default on their debt. Now, they've been buying things, you know, from Africa and buying things from America and so on. Well, what's going to happen is that the people that have been selling to them, when they don't get paid, say, well, in the future, you've got to pay us. I'll show you what happened to me. I'm running a company called the Atlantis Company. one of the principals in the company embezzled $40,000 out of the company and effectively bankrupted it. Now, I'm the co-signer. Little Georgie Gordon, you know, he went around to all these people, and he said, if this guy over here doesn't pay you, then little Georgie will. And I taught little Georgie about co-signing right there. So, anyway, I'm sitting here now with $42,000 worth of debt. So I went down to Don Watkins at Thriftway Lumber Company, and I said, Don, I got bad news. I'm bankrupt. And how much do I owe you? And he said, well, you owe me $9,000 and some change. And I said, okay, well, now I want to pay you this $9,000. And I think that I've got customers, and I think I've got product, and I think I've got good ideas, and I think that I can sell, and I think I can pay you. And I've got 22 creditors. You're just one out of 22. And I can go down here and file for bankruptcy, have this debt discharged. Won't be paid now. It'll be discharged. But I could do that, and then we could go back to doing business again. Or I can go to work on this debt, and I can pay you. But if at any time, Don, you were to call this debt or any portion thereof, it would sink my ship, and I'd be insolvent. I couldn't pay. And he said, well, what have you got in mind? And I said, well, here's what I'd like you to do. Put the $9,000 over here on the back burner and forget about it for now. I can only pay you the $9,000 out of the profits that I generate out of my business. So if you will sell to me COD, in other words, when I come in, I'll give you $500 cash and I'll walk out with the merchandise I need. I'll take those raw materials and turn them into finished product and go sell that and make a profit. Over time, I'll be able to pay off this $42,000 out of the $42,000 profits that I'm going to make. And he said, George, I love you like a brother. You're on. So he put the debt in the back. I went around to all the creditors, and all the creditors said, well, yeah, I'll do that. Well, everybody except the IRS. And when I went to the IRS, they said they would, but in fact, they didn't do it. They reneged on their agreement. That taught me a little something about dealing with criminals. You know, the governments of the world are criminal enterprises, and they behave just like criminals. Their word is no good. But that's another story for another day. But over time, I worked my way out of that debt, paid all of those guys off, had a very austere budget. My wife didn't like me for a long time. My kids couldn't go on vacation. They couldn't have all those thingies, you know, that we like to buy down at the mall. We had to go on a very austere program for about 3 years. But we got everybody paid off, you know, in the final analysis. But that's because I wasn't insolvent unless my creditors put me into insolvency, and that's what we Americans did to the Greeks. See, they weren't any worse off than we were over here. In fact, the debt structure of the United States is worse than the pig countries. That is, Italy, Ireland, Portugal, Spain, and Greece. They call those the pigs. Their debt structure per person and their income and GDP and so on, it's bad. They're insolvent. But it's no worse, and in fact, in most cases, it's a better financial picture than the United States. So, since the United States is in worse financial condition than the pigs countries, we had to do something to make sure that everybody in the world keeps their mind and their eye on somebody else other than the United States. So it's our rating agencies over here in the United States that rate these debt structures. And so our ratings companies picked on Greece and said, hey, those guys, they can't pay their debts, and we're going to lower their ratings. And that got everybody in the bond market around the world, and it's got all the governments and you and me and everybody else on the watching the news on Greece. And now pretty soon we're going to have our mind on Italy. And then pretty soon it'll be on Portugal and Spain and Ireland. See, nobody's looking at the United States and what our debt picture is. And that's what we need. We need to buy more time. And so for the rest of you people around the world, that's what we're doing. We've got all you people out there. We got your minds focused on Greece and Portugal now. You're not paying attention to what's going on over here. My God, we don't want you people looking at our debt structure. And if you think that theirs is bad, you wait until you take a look at ours. Now, that being the case, that's going to buy us a little bit more time. But it isn't going to solve our problem, ain't going to pay the debt off. But instead of you people cutting us off in 2010, maybe we'll be able to stretch this out until next year. Or maybe even the year after. Meanwhile, we're still borrowing up a storm. We're still inflating like there's no tomorrow. And we're still doing all the things that we've been doing in the past. And it gives Goldman Sachs, Bank of America, the politicians, and others more time to loot the Treasury. You see, when this thing turns turtle, it doesn't make any difference whether you owe $1 million or $100 million. You're not going to pay it. So it would be better to get everything that you can now while nobody knows what the hell you're doing or who you're doing it to. That's what the bottom line is. All right, now let's take a look at some more of the numbers. And the net result is that we're $6,666.66 short every year of being able to service the interest on our share of the national debt and the total debt that we owe. So we add to that $333,000 our total debt for next year, which is an additional $6,600. And now we owe $339,999.99. Now, it's hard for you to follow that, so I'll just round it off to $340,000. So when we start paying our debt, we owe $330,000. When we get through at the end of the year, we owe $340,000, $7,000 more. See what's happening to us? Every year that we pay $10,000 on this debt, we're going to go $7,000 further into debt. That's because we have to pay $17,000 a year just to keep even. We can't keep even. We're just like the Greeks. We can't service the debt. Now, at some point in time, the Chinese, the Japanese, and everybody else are going to wake up and say, the Americans can't service their debt. Do we want to keep sending them these goods? They're not going to pay us for the goods that they've bought in the past. They're not going to pay us for the goods that we're sending to them now. Do we want to work for the Americans for free? Or should we just forget about them and work for ourselves? And my guess would be at some point in time, like Argentina, back around 2003, if you'll remember, they're going to get put on COD, like I got put on COD. Now, here's what COD is going to do to us here in America. We export about $200 billion a year. So if you take the amount of soybeans and wheat and automobiles and computers and all the stuff that we sell in international markets, and you total it all up, it's $200 billion a year. Just write down the number 200. Now, we buy garlic and we buy all kinds of things, you know, like big screen TVs and shoes. Here's a good one, shoes. We Americans used to be self-sufficient in shoes, but now 99% of the shoes sold in this country are made overseas. All right, so that being the case, we're importing $800 billion worth of shoes, and we're exporting $200 billion worth of soybeans. That means that we're $600 billion short of being able to pay our bills. It's about 75%. Now, once we get put on COD, that means we have to pay cash. Well, since we're producing $200 billion a year, that's good, then we can only buy $200 billion a year. So we have an $800 billion budget, but we've only got a $200 billion paycheck. We're going to take a 75% hit. Your standard of living is going to go down by 75%. It's going to require rationing and import and export controls. So let's suppose that you've got a BMW automobile, and we're on rationing and we're on import controls, and our government in Washington has to take our $200 billion and figure out, well, we need to buy $800 billion worth of stuff. What's the most important stuff to import? Is it more important to import oil from Saudi Arabia or fan belts and radiator hoses from Germany? And I think they're going to conclude that we better spend our scarce resources on oil from Saudi Arabia. I think that's what they're going to decide. Or maybe coffee from Colombia, or maybe bananas from Guatemala. Remember, we import 50% of all the food that's in your supermarket is coming from outside our borders. That's a very vulnerable security issue, it would seem like to me. I think we're going to have to keep importing food, and we're going to have to give up on fan belts, radiator hoses, and oil. Anyway, our government's going to decide what you're going to import and what you're not. So that doesn't mean that you can't get a fan belt from Germany. That means that you're going to have to pay some smuggler who's going to smuggle that into the United States. They'll be smuggling like smuggling dope. And all of a sudden, you're going to have export controls. You know, all of you Mexican people here in the United States exporting this $17 billion a year to Mexico, oh, that's going to get shut off. Hey, we've only got $200 billion to start with. Do you think we're going to let you people send $17 billion of it to Mexico? That ain't going to happen. So you're going to have to stuff that money into your shirt pocket and then swim back across the river to smuggle it out of the country. So there's going to be a lot of smuggling. There's going to be a lot of black marketeering, and there's going to be a lot of shortages. That's what the bottom line is. And unemployment is going to skyrocket. In Argentina, in their debt default, they hit a peak of 62% unemployment. 62%. Can you picture the United States with 62% unemployment? In the last depression, it was 25. Today, it's 22. And it's probably going to go up to around 50 or 60%. I'm not a prophet, I can't tell you, but it's going to go up pretty dramatically. Now, next time, we'll take a look at the balance of this, and I'll show you that as time progresses along, and if we keep making our payments religiously, when we get through in 5 years, we're going to owe $50,000 more than when we started. So there's no point in making any payments at all, because the bottom line is it doesn't make any difference whether you go bankrupt for $333,000 or $3 million. Bankrupt is bankrupt. Meanwhile, we're out of time, so I'm going to have to remind you that you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has our radio log schedule and archives. All of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet.